B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome in, Zolak and Bertrand, on this Monday morning from various locations. Hi, Zol. Hi, Hardy.
Morning. Hi.
How you doing?
Hi.
Good? Good? How was the weekend?
Oh, yeah. Real good.
Weekend was good. Love kicking off this week with the outstanding weather we're having. It looks like we're going to have for the next 2 weeks.
That really is a kick in the groin, isn't it? The weather.
Yeah. I mean, is it or isn't it?
I think it is. Could we get a little less rain for just a few days here?
But if we got 70, 74 degree days and sunny, people are going out, bro.
That's true, too.
I'm telling you, this keeps people in. It's going to help us. I think it's going to help us.
You're right. It's true.
Positive
it does keep people
on. Right.
It does keep people more at home than it would otherwise.
And we'll get to at some point. You just discover more things every day that enlighten your life. And I'm just amazed by stuff. Here I am, 50 plus years into it. And I never knew about stuff, and bang, there it is.
Wow. No, I know what you're talking about. All right. What do you know about the NFL draft over the weekend? What do you know about the Patriots and what they did?
You know, looking deeper into it and watching some clips, and obviously, you know, you really don't know half these guys or pretty much 75% of the guys that they picked. So you have to start looking at it. First thing I'm going to say is I'm amazed at this quarterback from Louisiana Tech, who, and Beetle, you went down the wormhole looking at the pictures. He holds the football without using the string. So however the ball is snapped to him and however he grips that ball, doesn't matter if the strings are to the front, to the bottom, to the hand, or on the fingers. I don't think that's ever on the fingers. And this kid lit up UMass. You saw him this year, 69 points. So it's not like he can't throw the football. But I would be a little concerned at the next level because how slick the balls are and how sort of a little bit fatter than they are, the collegiate balls. And you can break the collegiate balls in a lot more than you can the pro footballs. But I thought it was a pretty decent draft for the Patriots. They addressed a lot of needs. And I think what they've done is they've added some depth and some competition at some key spots. And I think it's a massive, massive win for a guy like Jared Stidham. Stidham won the draft.
I think you're right about that. I also think that the approach on Friday night was terrific. I loved it. I love what they did on Friday night because they traded out of the first round, which was my plan for them all along. They followed my plan, and then they were aggressive after they used that first pick that they had on Friday night. They were jumping up the board. They were targeting guys. I thought it was great. Now, they drafted with their first pick in this draft a safety, a defensive back from a Division II school, which has obviously brought out some rage in some Patriots fans over that pick. First of all, that approach I do not like in that they drafted a defensive back in the second round. That is the only thing I wanted them not to do on Friday night. I said, you can draft anywhere on the field. Just don't take a defensive back in the second round. Not only did they take a defensive back in the second round, and we know their long history of failing in the second round with defensive backs, they took a guy from a D2 school. Now I feel they're flaunting it a little bit. Not only are we going to take the defensive back, we're going to take him from a D2 school. Okay.
I guess.
Hey,
it's football, and you put your pants on the same way, whether you're putting your right leg in or your left leg in first, and guys jump out on tape. I've always talked about this. It's not always about the stats or, you know, your combine measurables. I played with a guy by the name of Ben Coates, and he was drafted after me in the fifth round from Livingstone College, which is now defunct, which means they have no program anymore. And I remember us as rookies breaking Ben's balls. Where the hell did you play football? I never heard of this school. And then Bledsoe hit him up in Buffalo in the flat on this little pass that he took 55 yards, and we went, oh, But I also remember at practice, you know, being in a huddle with Marv Cook, who was a tight end here prior to Ben. He played at Iowa, and he's coming off a Pro Bowl season, his first Pro Bowl. And he shakes my hand. He goes, "It was nice knowing you." And I go, "What do you mean? I don't want to get cut." He goes, "No, no, no." He goes, "I'm not going to be here long." And I go, "What do you mean by that?" He goes, "That guy right there, he'll be taking my job in about 3 months." And that was Ben Coates. And that's how good Ben was when you get there. And maybe they see something with this kid. I don't know. I mean, we got to get to camp, let him see what he can do, check him out in the preseason. But, I mean, Jordan Richards is fresh in my mind, so I will be cautious with this, as will a lot of other people. You found Malcolm Butler very late and from, what, a Western Alabama school, which had maybe 3,000 people at football games. And Malcolm played at a high level. So, I mean, you just don't know. That's the great thing about football. You know, traveling around trying to find kids, trying to find these gems. But this will be considered a reach if he doesn't pan out.
Yeah, but should it, though? And this is what I've talked about before, and I talked about it on Friday. I said the big thing with the Patriots that I hope they don't do, and every team shouldn't do, is when you overspend to get a guy that nobody else was interested in the area in the ballpark, right, as I said, where you picked him. All indications are that they were in the right ballpark on this guy.
Yeah.
Surprising.
Go ahead.
No, no, I'd go ahead. I was going to say that a lot of mock drafts and a lot of people scouting, you know, put him sort of in this ballpark in the second round.
Right.
So I don't know how big of a reach it was.
This isn't Rozai Dowling. Remember, you look at Rozai, well, we don't have tape on this guy. Where the hell did they get this guy from? You even go back to, wasn't it Eugene Wilson they picked in the second round? Eugene was the second rounder, right?
Yeah. Yes, many
so,
in 2003,
a lot of people
right?
look at it and say, okay, there's the reach there. But, okay, Devin McCourty, this could be his last year. You know, he's coming back for another go at it here. Who knows? Maybe he's got two left in him. You already got rid of Daron Harmon in a trade. Patrick Chung, you know, you re-upped him, gave him a nice little bump last year, but, man, is he on the back nine. So at some point, your transition at safety is going to take place here within the next 2 years. And I love the size of the kid. He looks like Jawan Williams. So, I mean, maybe you're getting the bigger, stronger defensive backs and guys are going to knock heads from the safety position. That's what they're looking at, the Cam Chancellor type. So we'll see. We'll see. But he's kind of slotted there, which is interesting.
Yeah, people had him there. People had him in that ballpark. So it may have been a reach, a little tiny reach, but in terms of other teams' interest, that apparently did exist in this particular player. And he was at the Senior Bowl, and you've got to be really good to be making the Senior Bowl from, you know, FCS or D2.
Yep.
So
yep.
you know that he's the elite
there.
of the D2 guys.
Right.
But my bigger concern is not that he's Division II. I don't really think they reached on him. My concern is they drafted a defensive back with a second-round pick, and they've got a bad history of doing that. The only thing I do get concerned with, all about like D2 players or even FCS players, is that when they're sort of the man among boys out there, and by the way, he's 25, so he's a man. He's 24. Sorry,
that's
not 25.
What's interesting. I know it's interesting.
He's older.
He's that old, right?
Is and he spent 6 years at that school, by the way. Is that when you're that much better than the other guys on the field physically?
Yeah,
you're probably physically ready to play at a much better school or a much better conference or even maybe the NFL. This is the case with Duggar. But when you're out on the field in the terms of the competition you face every week.
Yeah.
Like, you have just such a massive advantage because you have to do less mentally and you could just do more physically.
I remember this, doing games at Southern Illinois. The Salukis, I went down there to do a game, and this is after Brandon Jacobs transferred from Auburn to Southern Illinois, and it looked like a man playing with a bunch of midget league players. And they're out there running around. And I'm like, this is embarrassing. There's three guys hanging on him. You can't tackle him. And, like, yeah, Cadillac Williams. That backfield was loaded at Auburn at the time. And he transferred out and had a great career with the Giants, won some Super Bowls. So, I mean, you never know.
Like, as a safety.
This
is speaking in very general terms. But as a safety, you could do a lot less reading and a lot more reacting is what you can do.
Oh, I like that. Read and react.
How do you like that? Little tease for maybe later in the show today. Whoa. But you can respond to things because you're that much faster. You're that much more physical. By the way, this guy can really hit from all the tape they've shown on him. This guy can absolutely pop guys, but that's the one thing I worry about with players like that. Like, all right, well, let's see. And he might turn out to be great. I wouldn't write him off. A lot of people are writing him off
already.
He may hit
like Ronnie Lott. Like, that was one of my wishes. Get a freaking home wrecker. Give me an a-hole. I'm not saying calling this kid an a-hole, but give me someone who's going to take someone's head off. I want it in the front seven, but we got it in the back end. And maybe he'll turn out to be Ronnie Lott. Yeah, right.
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. Listen, nobody knows. Best nobody knows right now what these guys are going to be. Nobody.
Not even the guys.
Go ahead.
You're getting an older collegiate player that you're going to inject into this locker room, more importantly, into defensive back locker room with the defensive player of the year in Stephon Gilmore and two very good pros in Devin McCourty and Patrick Chung. You know, you're putting them in a room with team captains there. So he's going to learn the way how to play the game the way they want him to play it. He couldn't ask for a better situation. It's not like he's going to be thrust in there on day one and asked to be a starter.
Well, I do think that the guys who even make the picks don't know today. I'm sorry, they don't. I mean, they've made their best educated guesses, but they don't know how these guys are going to work out or not work out. Artie, did you enjoy the draft over the weekend?
Yeah, Artie.
Oh, so much. It was amazing. It was really, really good. I didn't watch anything past Thursday. I read. Yeah. I read while it was happening, but I did not tune in for any more of the coverage.
Wow. Took a hard pass on the draft on Friday night.
Well, I mean, the actual drafting of the players, no. I mean, and I saw lots of reaction, read lots of reaction, and followed along. But, no, I did not feel compelled to watch the NFL show for a second straight night, much less.
Roger Goodell's M&Ms were gradually depleted over the course of the night.
You know, I love this. Yeah,
actually, you know what? Now that you mentioned that, I did see it. Yeah, I was peeking in on it because I did see. Yeah, I was watching that, and I remember him wearing something slightly different. And yeah, it's. But you know, everybody like saying record numbers for the draft, record ratings for the draft. It was amazing. Like, well, yes, I think we all knew that, good or bad, it was gonna do. It was gonna be a record number. Doesn't mean it was good TV.
I thought they did a pretty good job, you know, with going from bump to bump, studio to studio, guest, with the videos ready to go. It felt sort of a little bit like the normal draft without having the ambiance of, you know, the stage there, wherever, what city they're holding it at. But what I found amusing
all
was
things
Goodell.
Considered, though, I thought they did a really good job.
Oh,
all
people thought it was going to be a train wreck.
I thought they played it safe. And playing it safe has its reward in that the production quality was good, and it didn't seem that different from what you normally have. But
right.
I thought they could have used it to their advantage that everyone was remote and get, you know, something unique, but they didn't go that route. They played it safe. They had very few glitches.
Glitches, but I thought it was interesting. Goodell seemed like sequestered in his bunker alone. Then they would throw to the kid getting drafted, and he's at a house party, like 8 to 10 people at least. Some of them had 10 or more people in the background. I'm like, okay, they're not 6 feet apart, but
yeah. How about
that's family? I mean, if you're living with the family, that's your family. You know what I mean?
How about Rosenhaus? He's not doing a good job social distancing. He's going state to state and prospect to prospect home.
Got to sign clients, that's man. Nice. Got to get guys signed. Got to make money.
That's good.
It was his brother. Looks just like him, though. Was it sure it wasn't his brother?
Was not his brother. It was definitely not his brother.
His brother's a little fatter.
Back-to-back nights. Drew Rosenhaus. All right, so ratings were good. We'll tell you about that coming up. The league's obviously very pleased about what the ratings are. But we have more to get to. And as Zoe said right off the top, big winner of draft night for the Patriots was not anyone they drafted. It was Jarrett Stidham, who is on the roster and is going into year two, and the Patriots did not draft a quarterback in this draft. We'll talk about that. We'll get to your calls as well in reaction to the draft weekend for the Patriots and the NFL with a lot to get to here today, including a read and react later on in the show here on Zolak and Bertrand.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
First, our introduction.
Zolak. Bertrand.
Double whammy.
Zolak and Bertrand. Continues 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I like both those players. You know, we've had Brian a couple times, and I think, you know, he certainly gives us a very solid level of play, and you know, we have a lot of confidence in him. And Jared had a good year last year. He improved a lot, and we'll see where that takes him. So, Yeah, I have confidence in both players. The bottom line is that, you know, we're evaluating that position along with all the other ones. And if we feel like we find the right situation, we'll certainly draft them. And we've drafted them in multiple years and multiple points in the draft. Didn't work out the last 3 days. That wasn't by design. It could have, but it didn't. Again, there are multiple ways to build your team. We'll see whether or not that comes up at a different point in time. You know, I don't know, but we just tried to do the best we could with what we had in this weekend, and that's what we did, and we'll see where it goes.
Bill Belichick after the draft saying that it wasn't by design that the Patriots did not draft a quarterback in this draft, but the fact is they didn't. They didn't pick a guy.
That's easy interpretation right there. They're telling you, we did our work on him, and if somebody fell to us, whatever we deemed worthy of taking him, we would have. That tells you there's nobody in this draft that we would have reached for. Weak quarterback draft.
So there's no one that they prioritized or looked at and said, we got to make an effort to get this guy.
Yeah, we got to make an effort and give up all this value to get a guy that's really not better than the guy we got. And, you know, talking to guys, they feel, you know, Stidham's ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo where he was in his development. Not the same type of player, not comparable as far as they're both different. One's taller, one's shorter, one's more compact, one spins it better, one's a little more relaxed, more cerebral. But from a development phase, he's there. So, but you got to get out and play and you got to find out. And that's hard to do without being able to get in the building.
And do you think they have something else up their sleeve? Do you think it's Cam Newton or Andy Dalton or something along those lines?
No. I think it's the four they got and they're rolling.
So they're going with what they have and that's it. And then they picked up these undrafted guys along the way, one of which you referenced already.
Yeah, just can't wait to get there and see how he throws the football.
From Louisiana Tech, who, again, he has no regard for the Laces whatsoever.
Just
none.
Utter disrespect. utter disrespect for the way the football is made. And those poor women in that Wilson building that have that football inside out, and they're trying to get the laces perfect for you, get those strings nice and tight. And you say, F you, strings. I'm just going to throw it, gripping the pigskin.
I met them at the Super Bowl. Those people that make the Wilson balls?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Nice ladies.
The craftsmanship that goes into those footballs. Man. Unreal. And he has no regard for those laces that are there for his convenience.
Trying to help him out.
Enhanced performance.
Imagine what kind of ball he would maybe throw if he hit the strings. Think about that.
So as a quarterback, you should be offended. You should be offended by the way he throws that ball.
First thing I saw. What's this?
I couldn't stop looking for pictures.
I texted you guys. Beetle, and then my broadcast partner, Bob Sosi, sent me about 20. He goes, I never seen anything like this.
There's one where the ball is completely upside down. I was texting with Mike Giardi, and I said, look at this picture. And the ball is completely upside down, where the laces are on the very top, and his grip is on the very bottom. And it is just insane. It's an insane photograph of a quarterback throwing the ball. But he's going to be one of the camp arms, I think. I don't know if he's going to make the team. I don't know if either of the undrafted guys are going to have a shot to make the team, which is why I hold out some sort of hope that something exciting will happen or something that we don't see coming happens at the quarterback position over the next couple of weeks or months.
He may have 13-inch hands, you know, like big suckers.
So you tell me. I mean, it may not make any difference in terms of the way he's able to throw it, and certainly once the ball is airborne, it doesn't change anything. But just in your grip on the ball, I would think it's easier to keep a firmer grip on the ball if you're hand and your fingers are around the laces as opposed to just the smooth part of the football.
What's the torque? That's how you spin it. You know, that's you watch baseball pitchers and how they get the nails and how they dig it into the ball or how they hold the you know the strings and the stitches. It's all about rotation.
I don't understand how the ball doesn't wobble on them.
I don't understand.
It's crazy.
Pete, I'm telling you, they don't rub the balls down that much. You see how shiny. Look at the Brady pictures of all the balls he's been on.
So it's more of a tackified football there.
It is so shiny. Like, well, it's slick.
I can tell you, man. Like,
guys,
he can
at the
throw.
Next level.
Yeah, watch it. You know, I'm sure you can get it on YouTube. You can see the guy throw. He can throw the football.
Oh, he can.
So
I'm not refuting.
I don't know how. It's mind-boggling, but he can.
It's actually kind of cool. It's cool. It's something cool to see, and it's something.
It's just wild.
It's another thing to look forward to. Here's Tim Tebow gripping the strings, and he can't throw it like a paint can. This kid, he can throw it upside down. Yeah,
he throws ropes, and he's not even touching the laces. It's wild. So anyway, listen, Stidham is the winner here. As it stands today, Stidham looks at this, and this is his – I've always said it was his job to lose, but now they didn't draft a guy, which I think is a tacit endorsement of him going forward. If they didn't feel the need to at least get another guy, even if it is, though, in their mind, the equivalent to him, they didn't feel the need to get another one of that.
Right.
To bring in and compete and say, hey, we'll take two shots instead of one. Because if they thought that, okay, he's good enough to not get a guy, or what's available to us is equal to what we already have, they still didn't choose to get another one of what they had to form a competition or to use as a backup plan long term if one of them is to not pan out, whatever it might be. They didn't do that. Well, and so I think that's a win for him.
You already mentioned the safety, you know, that stood out at the Senior Bowl and how you get against certain competition and how you rise or how you take over a huddle. That's what happened with Stidham last year. So they're sitting there at draft time last year, and they're like, how the hell is this kid still here in the fourth round? We're going to grab him. If that was the case this year, if so they felt somebody was equal to Stidham, say like a Jalen Hurts or a Herbert, and they fell to them at the third or fourth round where they had this higher grade on him, then that's where you jump on the kid. But they're not going to give up a lot to go get a kid that Stidham already might be even better than. So it's a big draft for him. It was a big day. I felt that way, too, going back to my days. I remember you're sitting there and, you know, being a backup. You're like, oh, God, hope they don't draft a backup. And if you win that day where, okay, they didn't bring another guy in, you feel good about yourself. I think it's got to give Stidham some confidence as he prepares for the season.
617-779-0985. Let's get to some of your calls. David's in New Bedford on Jarrett Stidham. Hi, David.
Yes, I agree with what you were saying. I think this was a big win for him. I think not drafting a quarterback, I believe the Patriots believe that he'll be the week one starter for the Patriots. And that's my thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't even know that it's necessarily just about this season, though, too, by the way. I think what you're saying is right, David. But I would say in addition to that, isn't this about the next few years, too? I mean, Hoyer is Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
This is.
They
I
know
think,
what they have in Brian Hoyer. He's been in and out of here how many times, you know? Yeah. And
but
boy,
I think because what it means is if it's not – and we said this to go back to what we said a couple of weeks ago. If they draft a guy and they use a mid-round pick or better on a guy that they drafted quarterback, that means they're not sold on Stidham. And if they were to go get a guy in free agency, that doesn't reflect as poorly on Stidham. It's more about, hey, we still think he's the guy. He's just not ready yet. Correct?
Correct.
So if they were to bring in Cam Newton tomorrow and say he's the starting quarterback and we sign him to a one-year deal, I think that doesn't reflect poorly on Stidham. I think it actually means, hey, Stidham is still the development and the guy who's going to take over the reins, but he's not there yet.
That's exactly where they want Stidham. Yeah, like nobody wants Herbert or Tua to play. Like, you want a redshirt Tua this year. You got Chan Gailey down there. You coach up Fitzpatrick. He's a smart guy. He's your bridge guy to get to Tua to make sure he's completely healthy. You don't want to throw him to the Wolves. Same thing with Herbert out there in San Diego. You got Tyrod Taylor. You know, play him. Redshirt these guys. Let him learn the system. And if that would be the case for Stidham, yeah, he's perfect where you want him right now.
Because I could see a situation where they did draft a quarterback and Stidham still is the week one starter. I think Stidham's the week one starter either way. So if they had drafted a quarterback and Stidham starts, I don't think that necessarily means like, oh, Stidham's the guy going forward. I think them not taking a guy is what tells you the most. That they did not draft a quarterback, and when they say, as you said, Zoe, when they say that it wasn't by design, it was that they looked at the guys and said, yeah, there's nothing better than what we currently have. Let's go to Dean, who's on the Cape. Hi, Dean.
Yeah, just my question for you. I was just thinking that the Bills, is there a chance that the Bills took Frohm to try to block the Patriots, and that may have been the pick that Belichick's referring to that it didn't fall his way?
Okay, so what he's asking, what he's saying is Jake Fromm getting picked, was it a way of blocking the Patriots from drafting him?
Hey, he had six cracks at him.
I would say probably not.
Eight. I don't know. How many guys they take? 10?
Well, from when it picked number 167. So there was plenty of opportunity for the Patriots to take Jake Fromm if they wanted to take Jake Fromm.
Yeah.
No, I think that's I don't know how would we would discern that from the pick.
And it's like, it's real quick too. It's kind of like you already have Jake Fromm and Stidham. Like I look at those two guys as like played in the SEC, played at a high level, sort of the same guy. Why do you need two of the same guy? You know.
And that's
how I like Fromm.
Oh, sorry.
Yep. And no, it's just kind of what I took away from Curran's article. That you know why go with another quarterback if you're not sure is going to be the guy, but you think you've got that guy. You've got that guy in Stidham here right now. You could argue you have a couple of guys. So when it goes back to, you know, why didn't you, you know, make a move to get something? Because there were, you know, there were plenty of unknowns, as there are with any of these picks, but especially the quarterbacks that the Patriots reasonably could have had higher up in the draft. Well, why do that? You've got that right now. And then the guy you've got right now, he's already been here for a year, and you must like him to some extent. That automatically makes you like him more than other guys that are out there. That you could have, like I say, reasonably, but you're not sure about. Well, why double down on something like that?
Yeah, and if their project in Jarrett Stidham doesn't work out, I wonder that if they, because they didn't add on, let's say, a second developmental project in drafting one of those guys in the mid rounds or even as late as the fifth round, if they don't want to add another one of those projects, what happens if Stidham doesn't work out? And this is a much bigger topic and big picture thought. But if that doesn't work out, at some point they're going to have to do what most teams do, which is go up high.
Yes.
And so what they're saying is we're going to take a shot at developing a guy. We feel like we can do that. And if not, then we're going to have to go back into this thing and get someone who's, you know, in the top 10 of the picks that are coming out of college.
Right, right.
And that'll be plan B for the Patriots. 617.
And sorry, but Curran worded it a lot better than I did. But he said they're not in a position. Okay, that's not nice. Not in a position to be throwing away picks on maybes when they have better than a maybe already in house. That's a pretty succinct way of putting it. I like that.
I wouldn't agree with that though. I think he's a maybe too. I think he's just as much of a maybe as anyone in the draft. He's obviously got a head start because he's been here a year. But is anyone sold on Jarrett Stidham?
No, but the fact that he's been here for a year and they seem to like him automatically puts him ahead of some kid that they literally don't know anything about. They've, you know, never had him in a practice. They have no idea how he is in the room. They have no idea how he is around the other players. And those may be all small, you know, really intangible things, but you know Stidham, or at least we're operating with the belief that Stidham works out as a teammate here. Okay, good. Can he play? Maybe. What about these other guys? Maybe. But we have no idea if they'd get along well with what we've got going here. With Stidham, he seems to be on board, and it seems to be working out so far, at least from just a, you know, a player personality and work ethic standpoint.
617-779-0985. The impact that Bill Belichick's sons had on the draft. This came up during the conference calls with the players who were drafted over the weekend. We'll tell you about it, fill you in on the details, and tell you what we think it means. That's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Nap. Everybody, it's the moment you've been waiting for. Hot takes.
Well, you can clearly see there's a gap, and the tip digs in, and then boom, it pops up.
Oh, yeah. Zoe and Beetle.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
With the 37th pick in the 2020 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Kyle Duggar, defensive back, Lenore Ryan.
I didn't know that they were going to have interest in me. I was talking to them a lot during this process, a lot with Belichick. And so I didn't know they had interest.
With the 60th pick in the 2020 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Josh Uche, linebacker, Michigan.
I didn't have a formal with them at the combines, but I sat down with
Coach Belichick's son. We talked for a little bit, and then I talked with Coach Mayo on a virtual conference call.
That's from over the weekend. Couple of draft picks. Duggar and Uche, drafted by the Patriots, defensive players. Both stated that they spoke with Belichick's son. First one, actually, in Duggar said, I met with Belichick. And there's no other name in that audio. We've checked it multiple times. But the transcript provided by the team says Brian in it. Correct, Jim? You were the first one to notice this.
Yeah, because I had listened to it before I saw the transcript come out. I dialed in live on Friday night just to hear the guy talking, because I didn't know the hell he was.
So that's interesting. So he sat down with him. So that means prior to all this outbreak, Brian was maybe on the road doing work, probably at the University of Michigan, sitting down talking with him, because he mentioned he did the virtual one with Mayo.
We don't know which son it was for Uche, though. Just
well, regardless of which
son.
One, it said he sat down with him, which means it was in person. So it's had to be prior to COVID.
But Duggar just said, talk to Belichick.
I would take that as the head guy.
So would I, but the transcript indicates otherwise. So
yeah, the team release says Brian.
Yeah, the
so
team
then that was put out by the team. Then they want you to know that. Yes,
right. Doesn't that? What does that mean? That's what I'm saying. So otherwise, the transcript would have just said Belichick, and we all would have all just assumed that it was Bill Belichick, and we wouldn't have thought twice about it. Right?
He's grooming his kids. That's what he's doing.
But it was now in there that it was Brian, which means both sons are involved now in the draft. What does that mean about what the plans are for their future? Not that It wouldn't, not that this is the indicator that would tell you exactly what the plans are, but it's something. It feels like it's something significant that they're being mentioned, going out of their way to make sure that it's mentioned that Brian Belichick had met with one of these draft picks. Is that a push? Is that PR for the future? For any sort of, promotions within house?
Well, I mean, I think there's already a promotion in-house transpiring on the defensive side, right? We sat there and we watched Brian and Mayo call the signals, and you could tell when which guy is calling the signals
Steve.
For the defense.
You mean Steve?
Steve, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Brian is the younger one, and every time I see him, he's got three computers under his arm, carrying books, this and that. He is a workaholic. So maybe from an enhancement side of personnel, Brian's really bearing the nose in that, and that's why he's going around getting as much information as he can and maybe some of these personal interviews. So
it's interesting.
Brian
it was definitely
one...
something that caught my attention in reading just the part about from Uche saying that he had met with Belichick's son, and I immediately made the same assumption, and I guess you're right, we don't know, but based on him saying Mayo and also mentioning Belichick's son, I assumed it was Steve. So
that, I think that's what you have to assume. Yeah, sure. The two defensive guys are going to be calling the signals. So those are the ones they want talking to these guys. Yeah.
Interesting. You want Steve Belichick as the next head coach of the Patriots?
How's this defense going to play next 3 or 4 years? We're going to find out, right? This ain't happening anytime soon. Know that.
Yeah.
Don Shula's record's still out there, way out there. You got to coach. Got to keep coaching.
Right,
it's not a crazy question, and in some ways, it's even less crazy than saying, do you want Jared Stidham to be your quarterback for the next 10 years with the Patriots? We have less ability to see how well these coaches under Belichick do and what they're really capable of than we do of a player who we get at least to watch in training camp. And at least get to watch play some preseason games and have a few snaps in regular season games. With the coaching, it's much more difficult for us to tell what these guys are really all about, how good they are, what they're teaching the players, how they're working with the players, what type of systems they're implementing. So that's a complete leap of faith to say one way or the other. We really don't know. But since we don't know, I'd be willing to say, well, yeah, why not? We literally have no idea. I mean, Zoma, you might have more of an idea because you're there more and you speak with the coaches on a much more regular basis than the rest of us do. But to say, like, I can't imagine Steve Belichick ever coaching this team. Why not?
I've seen progressive involvement here, and what you take in is, okay, you could see a guy that's a card flipper. Card flipper's a guy just stands there, flips the cards. He's kind of a do boy, mm-hmm. runs and gets things, or maybe I have to go do a third down reel for the coaches, or maybe they want me to self-scout us from the last week at the bye. And then you can tell when a guy's involved, he's moving with positional groups, and then all of a sudden, okay, I'm the guy that's standing on the field holding the button, signaling to the head guy with the green dot, this is what I'm telling you to do. You know, you could tell, okay, there's advancement here. And you've seen the progressive advancement with Steve. And I've always been around Brian since he was a little kid. And it's been fun watching him just accelerate to the level he's gotten to now. And I always thought he would be the one fast-tracked to being a coordinator here someday.
Do you know what my fear is? And this is always, you know, sort of different when you're talking about anything Belichick-related, because when you say the name Belichick, it typically means it's better than any other coaching job being done in the NFL. But for the most part, over time, though, the father-son sort of transition in the NFL has not been all that successful. Rarely is the son as good as his dad. That's what I would say. We saw Mike Shanahan watch his son Kyle coach in the Super Bowl this year. That's the first time that's ever happened.
Go to Schottenheimer, Marty Schottenheimer, and his kid.
You know, and I would say, would you believe it though, that Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan, that duo, is the best father-son coaching duo in the history of the league. It is.
Yeah, because the dad's already won Super Bowls. Then you got Jim Mora Jr. You know, it's not like it hasn't been done before.
So there are two guys, though, in the history of the NFL, there are two coaches that had a dad who was a head coach that have won a playoff game. Did you know that? One of them is Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. The other one is Wade Phillips. Wade right, Phillips has a single playoff win in 2009. There have been two sons of former NFL head coaches that became head coaches themselves and have won a playoff game. It's happened twice. Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers and Wade Phillips. That's it. You can name all the other duos. None have gone as far as the Shanahans. Obviously, Mike Shanahan was an excellent coach and won Super Bowls. His son is now coached in the Super Bowl. They're the best father-son tandem ever. And what do you think of Kyle Shanahan, though? What are your thoughts on him?
I think he's just a jag, just another
guy. Okay, so that's my fear, just my instinctual fear that we've seen, you know, Rex Ryan. Was Rex Ryan as good as his dad?
No.
I'd say no. Was Dave Shula as good as Don Shula?
No.
Hell no. I mean, there's all kinds. You mentioned the Moores. Is that who you just mentioned?
Yeah. Jim Moores. Jim Mora Jr.
Jim Mora Jr., not as good as his dad.
Right.
So,
playoffs. Yeah.
I just think it's a reach to expect that a guy will even be will be equal to what his dad was at any point. You hope for him to just be good. And the best father-son combo ever, from Mike Shanahan to Kyle Shanahan, and so you just said he's a jag. I think he's good, but I don't know that he's great. I don't know how much, you know, right, credit he deserves, but that's just my fear, that it doesn't typically work out. That's all. And obviously it would probably be different because Bill Belichick is better than all those guys I mentioned. So we'll see. Just a thought, though, that was sort of brought up over the weekend.
You talk about the kids having input in making picks. What about the dog? That dog sat there pretty upright, and Bill did something. You see, when Bill went up, he moved the computer, tilted it down, so the dog actually had a better view at the screen. And maybe the dog was making picks.
Maybe. Maybe that was the case. There were plenty of questions about that. There was also a question with Bill Belichick about his new kicker that he drafted. Rohrwasser is the new kicker, and there's some controversy about his tattoos. That's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now it's time for more of Zolak and Bertrand.
That's what you put in your mouth in the morning.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The triple box on the Patriots Power Flex. Bill Belichick at his house in Nantucket. The Kraft family there. And Nick Caserio, the director of player personnel. And we've reached that point in the draft. We found the first player we don't have footage of. And it's Justin Rohrwasser, the kicker out of Marshall. So Rohrwasser is drafted to basically be the replacement for Steven Goskowski. Rohrwasser finished his senior season with 18 field goals on 21 tries, including a long of 53. And that long of the career came on the game's final play to seal a win against Western Kentucky. He made 35 of 36 extra points. He was a transfer from Rhode Island, so perhaps that's why he's always been on the Patriots roster going forward.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm.
Love the song.
Justin Rohrwasser, new Patriots kicker. That clip that we just played from the draft is, again, always my worst draft nightmare. You're picking a guy they don't even have any tape on. It typically means you reached. It typically means you could have waited to draft the player. In fact, Justin Rohrwasser, I would question, was he even going to get drafted in this draft if the Patriots didn't take him? That's a question that we'll probably never know the answer to, but I'd love to know. Could he have been had as an undrafted free agent as opposed to picking him in the draft?
I don't know.
At any point. And spending a fifth-round pick on a kicker. That, to me, seems questionable. That's what I would say about this pick. That's my first questionable matter about Justin Rohrwasser, who played at URI before transferring to Marshall. And he is now a member of the New England Patriots. However, that is not why he is making headlines this weekend. He's making headlines because of a tattoo of a group called the Three Percenters. That is what he has made some headlines for. There are pictures of him, one where he is wearing his Marshall uniform, where it is visible on his arm, and that caused some waves over the weekend. So, Hardy, you seem to know more about this than any of us.
Oh, I spent 5 minutes researching it just because I saw, you know, the tattoo pop up and people talking about it. So,
how many years of rednecks you take at Michigan State?
Is that a
100 level course? What?
Let me tell you something. Just growing up in Michigan, it's like, you know, you grow up close enough to Detroit, you automatically know everything about cars. You know, it's just like
right,
genetic.
Sure.
You know a hell of a lot about militia groups if you grew up in Michigan. I mean, they breeding them up there. So that's what the Three Percenters are. They're a far right militia movement, and they're about gun rights and resistance to the federal government. And
you know, I can tell you that I had heard of them once before this, one time ever, and that was. They had a group of their people in Charlottesville defending the Nazis there. So that's the one previous time I had heard of them, and they were providing security Unite the Right. Is that what it was called?
Yes, and I don't know that the actual Three Percenters, you know, officially were sanctioned and hired and. You know, bonded and licensed to, provide security that day. But
It was an unofficial capacity.
I think there were members, who were Three Percenters, who were moonlighting that day and decided to pick up a few extra bucks working a security detail. You know,
got it. That was the only other time I had ever heard of them. So I admittedly don't know a lot about them. So
one of the guys who started it was a member of another group called the Oath Keepers. Now, the Oath Keepers are retired military and police. You know, thank them all for their service. But once they're retired, they feel it is their obligation to maintain their oath and essentially go out there and still be soldiers and act in a way as a police officer would, without the pesky oversight of having a boss or having anyone actually. Dictating what you do, they just kind of go out there and still act like, cops and soldiers as they keep their oath. And, you know, you can't paint a broad brush. You can't say everybody's in it for the same reasons. And, you know, this kicker, he said that he had members in his family who were either police or military, and he just thought it was a police or military
thing. Why don't we play
thing.
It? Why don't we actually play that sound? Okay. We have that. Okay. And people can hear that for themselves. Here it is.
Your tattoo, or at least one of them, it matches a group called the Three Percenters. What's the story there? Is that something you associate with?
No, I got that tattoo when I was a teenager, and I have a lot of family in the military, and yeah, I thought it stood for a military support symbol at the time, and obviously it evolved into something that I do not want to represent. And when I look back on it, I should have done way more research before I put any mark or symbol like that on my body, and it's not something I ever want to represent. So it will be covered.
Yeah, all right. Pretty good answer for
Good for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
The 3%, by the way, refers to their belief that only 3% of the people living in the colonies took up arms to fight Great Britain in the American Revolution, which, again, you know, what do I know? What am I, a Revolutionary War scholar? But there are a lot of people who say, oh, no, it's a hell of a lot more than 3%. There's just no way of tracking it. But they, you know, they count themselves among those who are ready to fight the government. You know, there's a small group, you know, 3%ers. But, you know, we're here to take care of it for everybody.
And so, it sounds like they did the homework on him, because obviously they didn't have film on the kid when he got drafted. They talked about, I sat down, met with him, talked to him about that. So, especially coming out of the Aaron Hernandez thing with the amount of tattoos Aaron had, going all the way up the neck, the back, and trying to get into detail with all those men about gangs this, gangs that, were there killings in there and all that stuff. I played a bunch of guys that had tattoos all over their body. I never really looked at them or said, well, why do you have that tattoo? Why do you have this one? People use it as art. People use it as symbolism. If anything, go to his teammates and say, okay, did you notice anything weird with this kid? They say no. They say, okay, seems like a great kid, great teammate, and you draft him. Like you said, he's going to keep it covered, and something I don't represent or didn't really know much about. And got his
so teammate. Would they have been wrong to ask him about this in the pre-draft process?
No.
I don't think they would have been wrong.
Not at all.
The same way if there was, you know, something else that they saw, you know, hey, what is that all about? I mean, I don't have an issue with the masking.
Right. Hey, you got pulled over 4 times a month ago, once with weed, once with a loaded weapon that wasn't yours. Can we ask you about those? Yeah, sort of the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what that they would have been wrong to ask him about it, you know, to say, hey, this obviously means enough to you to tattoo it on your body. What's that all about? You know, and people are like offended at the idea that anybody, that any player would get asked about their tattoos. You just mentioned Aaron Hernandez. Yeah, maybe they should have asked him about his tattoos.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they could have discerned that he was out there in his free time murdering people. Maybe they would have figured that one out and said, maybe we don't want to employ you. You know, this is a job interview.
And you hate to bring up Aaron Hernandez. I know, but you hate to bring up Aaron Hernandez and any of these things, but if there was a lesson to be learned in that, go ahead and ask the question. You know, run the risk of offending the young man about that. What is that three? What is that three with the American? What is that?
What does that mean?
What's that stand for? Oh, you believe that county sheriffs are the supreme law of the land? Well, let's talk. Let's go down this rabbit hole together. Let's see how much you really care and think about this.
Say we remain close here for a really long time because of COVID. Are you going to be out on the front line with your guns when this thing all takes over? Yeah. Okay. Well, then we're probably not going to draft you. Right.
Let him know that Gillette Stadium has its own security and that they will not be needing his efforts.
We don't want you getting all excited when we roll out the militia from back in the day to fire them guns off after touchdowns, because that's kind of what we do.
No, but I think
scores here.
I think the biggest thing was that caught the attention over the weekend is the ties that group has had to white supremacy, and whether or not, you know, is this guy a white supremacist that we're going to put on the team? And I think that's what caught a lot of people's attention and why it's been in the news and why this thing has caused so many people to get so pissed off about it.
Any association with, I mean, look, you don't want to paint the broad brush. You don't want to, you know, label this kid anything that you hope to God he isn't. But anything you read about the 3%ers or the Oath Keepers, None of it's really good. You know, they're providing security, like you said, Beetle, or, you know, people associated with them for Unite the Right, or they're providing security for that InfoWars lunatic, whatever that guy's name is, the one who believes
Alex
that,
Jones.
Alex Jones, right. There were some members of one or both of the groups who were providing security for him. I'm like, oh, boy, that's nothing. That's no road I want to go down with anybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.